Oh, and I got a haircut. I got some pretend curtain bangs.
Look at you.
I know. Who am I? They're very greasy.
It.
I'm glad that this is, a little. I don't know what your screen looks like, but for me, you can't tell. Watch, you have like
You're
a really
small.
high def.
It's all
Okay.
blah.
You're my whole screen. I can see your pores, girl.
I can see
Oh
everything.
my
Go wash your
God. And what
face.
an
I'm just
oh
kidding.
my oh
I'm just kidding.
fuck that girl too, by the way. Oh my gosh. Do you have feelings about her? Girl, wash your
The go wash.
face.
No. I never read the book, but I've heard. I just, yeah. I don't know. Well, now I need to know. Now I need to know. Look at this organic shit coming up. I gotta know.
We
I
haven't
gotta
even
know.
started the show. Let's start the show
Okay.
and then we're gonna let's start with that. Okay.
Okay.
Well, welcome back to No Thank You Next. I'm Megan and I talk about true crime stories that happen while dating.
And I'm Rachel, and I talk about true crime stories that happened while married.
Okay.
Hello, welcome.
Hello. Hello.
We've got things to discuss.
Okay. So you were here right before when I was
Yes.
talking about Rachel Hollis. Not our Rachel.
Not me.
Another bitch named Rachel.
I'm the bad bitch, but I'm like the good bad
She
bitch.
spells her name with an EL. So she's
Oh, we
not
don't
even.
like that.
Ugh. Okay, but Rachel does listen to our podcast now. So, Rachel, we love you if you are listening.
Rachel, other Rachel.
Other Rachel, there's another Rachel that we know, and she is now a fan, and we love her. So we do love an EL. But not a Hollis. We don't love a Hollis. If here's a listener that has a Hollis, not you.
Again,
Unless Rachel
sorry.
Hollis listens to our podcast, then fuck you.
What?
So
Why? So why do you have such
I have,
animosity towards
okay.
Rachel Hollis?
So I have never liked Rachel Hollis before even this incident that occurred a few weeks ago.
Oh.
She is okay. As a person that came from an abusive relationship where someone also cheated, basically her frame of mind is, girl, you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and you need to figure it out. If your man cheats on you, what did you do? Type
Oh
of
no.
yes.
Oh no.
She talks about how her boyfriend at the time that became her husband was so fucking shitty to her and how they pushed through and then she married him. Bitch, you should have dumped his ass. Oh my God. I love that guy on TikTok. Dump his ass.
You're not being sad over men. He doesn't give you forehead kisses, dump his ass. He refuses to get mani-pedis with you, dump his ass. He jokes about breaking up with you. Give him something to laugh about, honey, and dump his ass. You should be pampered like the queen you are.
But that's what I would have told that woman. If my friend was dating a man, how she described her
Wow.
husband, piece of shit. And she just goes around basically telling women if they, so she goes around telling women the only thing as women that we all have is the same amount of hours in a day. Forgetting to mention that she also has help like nannies and housekeepers. Maybe single mothers have as many hours as you, but they're working most of them and does not have the time to start that MLM or to go and do she's like, if my, by the way, her husband is one of the CEOs of Disney or something. I can't remember. He's
Okay.
very, he's like incredibly rich. And
Okay.
she's like, had I not pursued my dream, you wouldn't be reading this book. And it's like, bitch, you had so much money to fall back on. If this didn't work out, you have so much money. But the nastiest thing I recently found out about her from another podcast is that she does these seminars. And will empower, it's like Scientology, like Scientology or whatever that other one was, where they give you the front that it's for like self-help, but they give you tools and whatnot. And these seminars are very expensive. And so for whatever reason, she came out late, so a lot of people left, but there were still people there. And she said allegedly,
On the last night of the conference, there was a sales keynote scheduled. The day was running late because they were behind schedule a bit, and some people had gone over. So RH was the last keynote of the day, and when we got to the end of the scheduled time, she told us that she still had so much more to go through, and if we were willing to stick around and listen, she was willing to stick around and share the rest of what she had prepared. A lot of people got up to head to dinner, but my friend and I stayed. We felt like this would be it. This was the secret sauce and the real truth behind how RH had built the empire she had. And we weren't wrong. We got the sauce. Toward the end of the keynote, I'd imagine she was tired and not her sharpest and let her guard down a bit. And I'd imagine her team was squirming as she said, allegedly, the person who emailed me said in a story that I corroborated that Rachel said the following. You want to know why I'm so good at what I do? I'm so good at what I do because I own you. I own you. I could sell you dirty socks because I've gained your trust and your respect, and you want what I have. It's not about what I'm selling. It's about the fact that I own you. And that is why I will always be successful, no matter what I do.
Literally everything I do in my life is to live a life that most people can't relate to. Most people won't work this hard. Most people won't get up at 4 a.m. Most people won't fail publicly again and again just to reach the top of the mountain. Literally every woman I admire in history was unrelatable. If my life is relatable to most people, I'm doing it wrong.
Which is wild because that is literally how she sold herself. As a woman among every other woman on Instagram, she became famous because she started posting her body after pregnancy and wanted people to relate to her.
I don't need to tell you why that's a problem. I don't need to tell you why that's deeply offensive. And some intent excuses for the why. She talks about how if your friend would like make plans with you and always flake out and break them, and you wouldn't respect her. It implies that if you break promises to yourself about your diet, you shouldn't respect yourself. That you
like, that's so fucked up, right?
Yeah, completely. It's just, you're already taking somebody who is so vulnerable, who is looking for help in a self-help book, and then to immediately like blame them
for
and
everything.
Shame them for something that could be very easily just taken in a different way or spoken about in a different way. Like,
yeah,
to place blame on them like that, mm-hmm. They already feel bad enough. That's why they're reading a self-help book, because they're trying to better themselves. They don't need you to make them feel worse.
Yeah. So I'll try and find what the email. So the podcast is Be There in 5, and it is it's a solo podcast. Her name is Kate, who runs it, but she did a 3-part series on Rachel Hollis. The mentality, like, I think to a love warrior, what's her name? Oh, God. I always do this.
I didn't get
Glennon Doyle.
Could you try again?
No, Siri. Glennon Doyle is someone who I believe came out around the same time, and her mm-hmm. book isn't as self-help. It isn't, it's more of like her story, but how she came out of that. But it is very much self-helpy, and you just kind of like, I don't know. But Glennon Doyle also goes on tour and gives motivational speeches, and I would describe her something like you, Rach, like just like exudes like just like joy, but also just, you know, like you feel so safe, like mm-hmm. hearing her talk, like it's just like a safe space. Like that's how I would describe you. You're a very safe space.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. But yeah, it's just like, but hearing these two people, and it's just like, that's not how you continue being successful. Like this attitude that you're better than these people that are coming to you so open, and these leaders at these companies telling people that they work with, that there was a video that she plays in the podcast where there was a Zoom, I believe it was a Zoom, but these women basically saying to their team in a meeting, I only had $180 in my bank account. I went negative to go to this Rachel Hollis, not meeting, not like, performance. God, I can't think of the word either. I know. Oh my God. I feel like I said it was
seminar. Seminar.
Thank you. Thank you. There we go. They went to her seminar and she was like, I went negative. And if you need to do whatever you can do to go to her next one, I don't care if you, that's all the money you have, you need to go. And that's like the mentality of these people, like that leave. They're so brainwashed. So, and it's just sad to me. And Rachel Hollis has yet to take accountability. She wrote that post on Instagram saying, I needed to just like shut my mouth. I shouldn't have said anything.
100%. It's like these people are like, it's like they're paying to be gaslit. Like someone is making them feel bad, making them think a certain way, but it's like, that's not the truth at all.
No.
But in the way that it's being represented, like the way that Rachel is bringing her material to the table, it makes people feel like, oh, I'm the screw up. I'm the one who's doing everything wrong. And it's like, she's in your head. She's a little earwig in your head. Yeah, which is
exactly why I compare it to like Scientology and NXIVM, because it's like these people tell you you're the problem and we're the solution for you to be a better person. It's very culty, very just so negative. Like it's just such a negative way to empower a person, you know? Like there's so many better ways that you can empower a person to be better, do better, just live a better life without making them feel like they're a piece of shit and you have the solution to making them a better person. So Rachel Hollis can suck a dick. And
well, now I know there's, found an article that has that exact like phrase of how she hopes that she comes across unrelatable. And just like that whole paragraph, it's just so crazy.
But that like
you
she
wouldn't
said in the
want to be relatable, even though you built your whole business off of
like,
it. Like it
just, why you're not fucking Oprah. And by the way, Oprah would never fucking talk like that. But because of the way she is, we know we can never be Oprah, but she's never told us we could never be Oprah, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
she just lives her damn life and we know that we'll never be Oprah. Like, I don't have the money to build a school and take care of a million girls. Like, I don't have that kind of money or that hard.
No.
But like, I didn't go finish going to school to be a teacher for a reason. But truly, like, the audacity. And I, like she said in the podcast, which I probably will cut out, but she said, it's not cancel culture. It's accountability. Like, yeah,
exactly.
And that's the thing is these, like, we haven't had too many women that have been held accountable simply because we're focused on the trash that needs to be taken out. And it's many, many men. But the reality is, like, had she come out and 100%, if you go to her Instagram and see that post that she wrote, the most recent thing she wrote and then went silent, she did not write that. That was her publicist, 1,000,000%, because when she tried to apologize for the original video, she then had to apologize for both of the other things. So she never learned her lesson. Also never took accountability. She 100% said something like, despite my upbringing, like it was like, bitch, you're still not getting it. So it's just like, you know what? Like, I hope she takes this time to reflect, but we need to educate. Kelly Osbourne, I sent you that Doc Shepherd armchair expert episode with Kelly Osbourne. It was so fucking good. She basically goes into like cancel culture and how we as the white, as white people need to educate ourselves, but also not dictate the rules, because you have people are saying, okay, she gave an example. She was at a dinner and she said something about being blacklisted. And someone goes, oh my God, you can't say that anymore. Like, that has to do with slavery. And she was like, oh God, I didn't know. I'm so sorry. And then her friend was like, fuck no, I'm going to Google what this actually like came from, because people are being so careful that it's like, what? And it's the thing was, she also said, it's white people that are making the rules. You don't hear a black person being like, oh honey, you just said blacklist. Like, that's a fucked up word. Like, the reality is we're the ones that are now policing ourselves, being so fearful of being the people we were before we started educating ourselves. But the reality was, blacklist was created in like the 1500s, and they put people on the list that were like criminals or something. Like literally nothing to do with slavery.
Like, but because it had the word black in it, this person decided to say, oh, you can't say that. It
exactly.
Okay.
So basically cancel culture and like everything that's happening with the women's movement, everything that's happening with racism and canceling. It's like, she kept talking about, we need to educate people. It's cancel culture comes when you educate someone or they don't want to be educated and they double down. And then it's like, all right, go fuck yourself. You can go.
Yeah.
Whatever it is you need to do. But like, of course there's acts that are not okay. Like if you're a pedophile of some sort and you rape women, there's nothing to educate you on. You knew it was wrong. You're
just a terrible person. Yeah.
let's just cancel you right off this planet. But yeah. So it's just, again, you know, let's just do better. Can we? Can we do better?
We're trying.
Can we just do better? Each and every Hollis day. Rachel Hollis is not trying. She finally shut her mouth. So, you know, I'm going to let us hope that Rachel Hollis comes back with a book that is well-written. And I just don't see her ever learning.
I saw a commenter on one of these articles about like how her next book is going to be just like work I've plagiarized from other people.
Oh, also that. Yeah. She like literally has plagiarized from so many people. But yeah, that's another, I don't have time. We don't have another episode just for Rachel Hollis at this point. It's just, I cannot, but.
So don't buy her books, guys. Because she does not give a shit about you.
She does not. If anything, go by Glennon Doyle's book. Go by
Brené Brown.
For God's sakes, Brené will help you through any situation. And that Texan will give you a sweet warm hug and tell you you're amazing. but speaking of cancel culture, guys. Okay. So we talked about it on here. There was the Demi Lovato documentary. So Rachel finally watched it. I felt very just like overwhelmingly compassionate towards Demi and what she had been through. And this, what we're going to talk about has nothing to do with that. Like, they live in separate areas. Like, what she went through, I think we'll cross, if there's a Venn diagram in the middle would be like her audacity, but like her audacity only occurred because she's surrounded by a ton of yes people. But before I get into the negative stuff, let's discuss the actual documentary. So all of you can go watch it. Rachel was the only one that could not for free. So
it blew my mind because everywhere you look, it says that it is a free documentary. Yeah. It's a YouTube originals. You can watch it for free. Like, I watched the Paris Hilton one, no problems. I watched the Britney Spears one, no problems. I watch anything on YouTube, no problems. this one thing, as soon as I would start it, within 3 seconds, I would get a pop-up that said video requires payment to watch. And then it wouldn't let you pay for it. It would just say retry. So you would hit the retry button and it would play for another 3 or 4 seconds. And then I would get the same pop-up and it just kept doing it. So, and then it did it on like Mike's computer. I like tried it on Sam's tablet. I thought it was my device. I tried it on my TV. Like I could not get it to work. And then I was dealing with YouTube's customer service. I literally dealt with them for a chat back and forth for over 2 hours, and then emails, which carried over to the next day.
Honestly, like I would have just created a YouTube account for Sam and been like, maybe it's my account.
But I don't know what it was about it. Like, I honestly don't. And it never got solved with YouTube either. They couldn't figure it out. They thought it was just like a weird error, a weird glitch. They couldn't figure out why it required payment, because it doesn't. It's free. So thankfully Megan gave me her login and password. So that way I was able to watch it with no problems, no hiccups, no glitches, whatever. And I think it's like 4 episodes. They're all about 45 minutes long or so.
Yeah.
So
30 or 40 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty easy to just like binge the whole thing in one sitting, but yeah, it was dark. It was really shocking.
Yeah. Like she really discussed, there were no topics that she would not discuss on that from what it seemed like.
Just completely transparent. Like,
yeah,
she would talk about, her drug addiction, her drug abuse, her partying, her eating disorders, the people that she had around her that she thought maybe weren't the best, or that she would try to like hide stuff from, her poor parents having to go through the ups and downs of what I know. Was kind of putting herself through.
Sisters.
It was a lot. And then having to still be like this face of positivity and like,
Cause she always has seemed so positive. Like it's never, I've never felt like I've ever seen any articles where she's like negative in public or with fans or anything. Like she's always like super upbeat. So like to hear all this stuff that she went through and the addiction and like, it's just so heartbreaking. And the fact that she really could have died, like she was so fucking close to dying. And it was just like, it took her assistant being there right at the nick of time. And it was just, and the men that she, that just took advantage of her. It's just so disgusting. And I didn't see that coming. And then, you know, we saw it play out in real life before the documentary, of course, but her and that guy that ended up dating during quarantine and then got engaged rather quickly and then broke up, and he completely used her to become famous. And he was so nasty and just like asked the paparazzi to go to, well, this wasn't in the documentary. This was real, like outside of that, that I followed because I was obsessed, but he like had the paparazzi follow him to a fucking beach, the beach that they got engaged at, where he sat in the sand and cried.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No, no. Yes. Cancel that guy. That's so ridiculous.
He is such a piece of shit. And then like tried to say Demi was like the one that was nasty, but it was like, bitch, we all know like you are.
Yeah.
But speaking of Demi being potentially nasty. Oh no. Do you have a visitor?
I think it's Honey.
Oh, okay.
The door handle just keeps rattling.
Oh my God.
So scary. Like when you don't expect it, and I've got like my headphones, I can't really hear anything. I'm like,
oh my God. Just something out of the corner of your eye.
Yes. Oh God. It's like I'm in a horror film.
Yeah, seriously. Sorry. Oh my God.
That really, like, that got me. Jesus. Okay. Anywho. Okay. Sorry. So
speaking
that guy
of the Kyle. Negative side of Demi. I don't think she's a nasty person. I don't think anything happened in this relationship that deserves that shit. But
this was just like stupidly This was it was taking it too far.
Rachel Hollis energy, and I need it to not be Demi Lovato, because I just, this is what I think. I think she's on a high horse because she has so many people positively like holding her up, right? After watching this documentary, it's probably this, I mean, outside of her music, she has done other stuff, but this is probably the most vulnerable thing she's ever done. Now you have millions of people coming to her being like, I love you, I love you, I love you. And being like, you're so brave, you're so strong. And she's like, finally, like, my voice is out there. So now she's like dedicated to this eating disorder stuff that she like opened up about, and then was like, oh, everyone's gonna want to hear this. And it's like forgetting that the entire world does not revolve around Demi Lovato.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to this frozen yogurt shop. They have gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free options for people that are gluten intolerant, have diabetes. Like, who knows? There's so many fucking other people in the world that have so many other things other than Demi Lovato's eating shit that she fucking posts and blasts this fucking small business trying to get them to just be like super fucked, and it completely backfired on her.
Exactly. Well, thank goodness that the owner said something, because she wasn't about to let celebrity take her down, which was
100%.
It was great that she stood up for herself. She stood up for her business. But so Demi Lovato got upset that the sugar-free options were right front and center right before you go and you pay for your frozen yogurt. And she struggles with the desire of wanting to eat things that she has been restricting for herself. Like, she doesn't want the sugar-free
diet options. Culture. Yeah. Like diet.
Yeah.
She blames
it on diet culture.
Yeah,
exactly. But then the owner came out and was like, hey, this isn't for diet culture. It's for people who have like diabetes, like you had mentioned, or people who have other health problems who can't eat regular full sugar cookies or full sugar, whatever options we have. Like, for the other people, like, I'm sorry, it doesn't say vegan or specifically like people with gastrointestinal issues or like blood issues.
Yeah. Sorry, and then it's like,
there.
Would a customer be like, type 2 diabetes? Oh, let me look up on the board. Oh yeah. I can get the sugar-free peach sorbet. Exactly. Like, what are you?
Exactly.
It's just the, again, the audacity is just like, I really think that this, had this happened before or whatever, this whole documentary, and she's on this high horse of everyone supporting her, that I just don't know that she would have had, maybe she would have, and people would have been like, whatever, and this place would have been canceled. Do you know who Gabby Hanna is?
No.
Oh, she's a YouTuber. But I saw this video the other day and it was like, Demi Lovato is giving me Gabby Hanna vibes. Basically, Gabby Hanna is this YouTuber that everyone fucking hates, but she'll like go, like, she'll go in the mirror and just be like, bullies? You mean the bullies from high school? And then that's it. Okay. She just yells all the time. She thinks she has a singing career. I mean, Demi Lovato obviously was like phenomenal,
right?
But Gabby Hanna is just like, if any of you know who Gabby Hanna is, like, truly,
if you know, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. But anyways, truly just what a clusterfuck of a couple weeks with people, just their audacity and allowing themselves to go live and to push record when they go to post on TikTok, Instagram, all of their platforms.
Just don't.
And if we've learned anything, Demi Lovato walked away and didn't have frozen yogurt. So she has it so hard, guys. Don't ever forget it.
Right?
All right. Well, you're not here to hear about cancel culture or us talk about people we hate. Although, you know, we do talk about people we hate on this podcast because, right? You know, murderers right. suck. I don't even know. Was that like 3 hours? Because I felt like I just talked for 3 hours about people I hate. I don't hate
them. Your almond throat hurts. All right, we're done. Bye, guys.
Yeah, anyways, we're trying something new. No thank you next to fucking celebrities.
That's right.
That's our off-brand show. Off-brand? Guys, if you know me, I don't know sayings. So I make them up on the fly.
We love you for that.
Thanks. All right. So today I have a story for you. Now, when I say Travis Alexander, does that ring a bell?
No.
I feel like in so many famous cases, it's the murderer that becomes famous and the victim's name gets lost. So in this case, if like you and Rachel said no, when I say Jodi Arias, does that ring a bell? Yep.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's so fucked up. Yeah. Like how, that sucks. I'm sorry. I'm just.
But this is what happens. Like, do we know every one of Dahmer's victims? Do we know every one of Bundy's victims? It's unfortunate. It is unfortunate, but I am here to tell you a story about a name of a victim whose name was lost. So this story was publicized on a level not all murders are, because Jodi was a horrible actor that wanted you to feel bad for her and loved the spotlight.
She was batshit crazy, dude.
She's fucking nuts.
She's nuts.
Yeah. Ugh. And there was a lot of things I didn't know about this case. Honestly, like Dateline did it recently, and I heard so much shit. This is a story that, of course, I felt I needed to tell at some point, but it was just very heavy, like as far as information goes. So I finally took the time to actually research it after I heard Dateline do it. And I mean, they did it in an hour. So I was like, oh, okay, I can probably, I was like, this is gonna take me 3 years to freaking like tell this story. But I was like, if Dateline can do it, then I can probably figure out a way. So today I'm gonna tell you all the information I discovered, and maybe it's stuff that you already knew, but either way, this story is crazy, so buckle up or snuggle up, because here we go. We start this story on June 9th, 2008 in Mesa, Arizona. Mimi Hall is packing her suitcase to go on a work retreat with her close friend, emphasis friend, she had met at a Mormon church event named Travis Alexander. Travis saw Mimi as a potential suitor, so he invited her on this work trip. It was to Cancun and said all expenses paid. So she was like, duh, yes. They texted every once in a while, but basically she hadn't really heard from him before this trip was taking place. So she, I mean, like all of us, like if we're going on a trip with a friend, even you're like, kind of like, okay, so how are we packing? Okay. So like, what are we thinking we're going to do? Maybe that's like a really girl thing. I don't know if I would text Vince, because honestly, I've been on one trip with Vince due to COVID so far. And I fucking asked him what I should pack for this one event we had to go to in Spain. And he's like, I don't know. I'm wearing jeans and like a button up. I show up in fucking jeans and a tank top, and all the women are wearing such cute dresses that they packed for this one night. And I was like, no. God damn
Never
it.
Never again.
Never again will I trust you when it comes to packing. I will go with my gut. I'd rather be overdressed than underdressed. Not that anyone ever judges, but you know, like all the men were kind of dressed like I was, but all the girls like use it as an excuse to dress up. It's so fun. So anyways, Mimi probably wasn't asking Travis what to pack. She was probably just asking for details on the trip.
Right.
But she was texting him and he wasn't responding. So when she doesn't hear from him that night, the night before the trip, since she doesn't hear from him the night before the trip, after texting him for several days and not hearing anything, she's like, what the heck? Like, this isn't like him. So she goes to his house and it's dark. and no one comes to the door, even as she's banging on the door and ringing the doorbell. She kind of begins to panic and calls friends from the church, and they also hadn't heard from him for several days. So she's like, okay, he's not ghosting me, because like, that would have been my first thought. Okay, he just didn't want to take me to Cancun. Okay. Like, but she's like a much better person than me and actually went to his house. So she calls a mutual friend and asks her and her boyfriend to come over. They see Travis's dog inside, but nothing else. They finally call around and get the code to Travis's garage so they can basically go in and check. They go through the garage, then the laundry room, and they begin to smell something horrible. They think maybe it's a dog and maybe it just like shit somewhere, but they just keep making their way through the house. They go to Travis's room and the door is locked. Now, guys, Travis had a roommate, and that roommate was home while they were banging on the fucking door and ringing the doorbell.
What the fuck?
Yes. So he said he was in his room watching a movie and was unaware of any smell when they asked him, like, hey, what's that smell?
What?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
I propose that there needs to be a Nexter in every household, because what the fuck? My first thought when I smell something, it's not like, oh my God, there's a dead body. But from what I've been told, like, trash doesn't smell like a dead body in my, like, from what I've heard, like, you can kind of like, one smells much worse than the other,
right?
So they also had a third roommate who had not seen Travis for a week. When asked, have you talked to Travis, they're like, oh no, didn't he go on his trip already? Okay, Mimi is like, no, because we're leaving tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So Zach's like, okay, I don't know, but I haven't seen him in a while. So I have a spare key to his room for emergencies. Let's use it to go in there. So he is the one that goes in there and opens the door. And as soon as he opens the door, he sees blood everywhere. He makes his way towards the bathroom because he sees that there is a hand mark on the wall with blood, and it slides toward the bathroom.
Oh my God.
So once he rounds the corner, looks into the shower, he sees Travis slumped and clearly dead. He comes out and tells everyone Travis is dead, but he's much more frantic than I just said it. He's like freaking out. They call 911 and now police get involved. Detective Flores and Deputy Attorney Juan Martinez are first on the scene. The first thing they realize is the house itself is incredibly clean and organized. They then make it to the shower, and Travis didn't die in the shower. He had been dragged into the shower from what it looked like with the blood on the ground. And then they basically, the killer, we know it's Jody, but basically rinsed him off. Like, I don't understand the background of that. We don't ever really get answers, but it's just very odd. Also, they saw that his fingers and toes were turning black, so he had definitely been there for a while. There was blood literally everywhere, from blinds to the sink to the floor to the walls. They had no idea how he was killed, because he was in such an odd position and beginning to mummify that they really couldn't figure out like how he was killed. Wow. They did find a .22 caliber casing on the floor, so they knew that that was involved in some way. They also found that all of his bedding was removed from the bed, and Travis, like I said, had been rinsed. So it was almost like, I don't know, like a part of me wants to say DNA evidence was rinsed off of him and the sheets being gone. But the reality was, like, there was so much blood that, like, and also handprints that obviously weren't his, that it's just odd, like, I don't know. Do they not know forensics was the thing? Okay. So the roommates weren't of much help, because they just thought the smell was dirty dishes or trash.
The trash.
So odd. My first thought again. Not dead body, but not trash. Well, they, of course, need to find more clues since the people in the home were useless. They are looking through the washer and the dryer, which is protocol, and find towels, which is completely normal, in the washer. But below the towels, they find a digital camera. They know immediately that they need to recover whatever is on that camera. It's completely waterlogged, and they know it's Travis's camera, and he had just got it. So they're unable to actually get the camera to work, but when they go to open where the memory card is, it's in pristine condition. Oh, so wow. The water did not get into where the memory card was, thankfully. So they're like, okay, so that's the first thing they start working on, because obviously someone was trying to hide something if they put a fucking camera in the washer. And it's like a legit camera. It wasn't just like a digital little, like, whenever I heard this story, I always thought it was like a tiny little Canon. You remember when those came out in like,
oh yeah,
2004, and it was like so popular.
One. Oh, I totally have one.
Yeah. But this was like one with like a lens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, it's the amount of times that my little camera ended up in like a pocket or something weird, totally understandable. But this was like an actual camera. So like a, yeah, like you need two hands to hold. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little weird that it would end up there, because you would completely notice that it's not like coins in your pocket you forgot.
Exactly. So
as they're trying to find out who could have done this, they begin to learn about Travis. Travis did not grow up in a typical household. He grew up in Southern California, and his parents were neglectful. His mom would beat him, and eventually his grandmother took him in, and his grandmother was a Mormon. He was 10 at this time, so very impressionable, and he took to the Mormon religion quite quickly. He later chose to do his Mormon mission and walk around neighborhoods preaching about whatever Mormons preach about. You know, that guy that like is on the bike and wants to go in your house and talk your ear off, and you know, oh my gosh, this just like reminded me
about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
No, like, get off my lawn.
Yes, exactly. Oh my god, my mom, because we were so I grew up in Simi Valley, which I don't know if I've ever talked about that here, but I was in choir. And so most of our choir consisted of Mormon people. There were so many Mormons in Simi Valley. But yeah, our choir consisted of so many Mormons. And my mom would go on trips with us for our competitions, for our big trips. And I don't know how one of the moms convinced my mom to hear her son out about the Mormon religion, but she did. And I remember one day I like came home, my mom's like giving him cookies and lemonade and shit. And I'm like, what the fuck? Jesus Christ. We say no, no,
no, no, I am not interested. No, no.
But I will say, like, in Book of Mormon, the musical, which I won't touch too much on because it is like a complete joke for Mormon religion, but because it's made by the people of South Park, but like when you go on a mission, the goal is to go somewhere amazing. Like, you want to go to like fucking Spain and like teach people mm-hmm. about the Mormon religion, but in the play, they go to Orlando. It's like so funny to me. Orlando. Like, it's so funny to me.
Like, oh my
like,
god.
You're going to Bosnia. You're going to, and they're like, you're going to Orlando. It's like, okay. But yeah, so funny. But anyways, I don't know where he did his mission, but he did it, and he did he maxed out his Mormon steps, and he taught so many people about the Mormon religion. So Travis ends up back in Southern California after doing all his mission stuff, and gets a job at a prepaid legal service company. It's a mouthful. I think they call it a PPL later or something in an article, and I ended up starting to write that. But basically, it's an MLM, which is a multi-level marketing scheme. I like to add Ness to that. It's an MLMS. Oh my gosh, I saw this thing the other day, and it was like, whatever the, what is it, Ronan Fields or whatever, the brand that's one of the MLMs, but it's like, she was like, I've never had a friend that's ever used the stuff except for the people that sell it. And it's so fucking true.
It's true. Like, it's true.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. But anyways. So basically an MLM, if you don't know, it's where every one of your high school friends Facebook DMs you and calls you a boss babe and wants you to buy stuff from them.
It's like Mary Kay.
It is like Mary Kay or Tupperware or what was that cooking one? My mom was such a sucker for that one.
My mom would buy stuff from that too. I know exactly.
It was actually good stuff, but it was expensive.
It was expensive. God, what was
bakery?
No.
I feel like it starts with this. Oh, Pampered Chef. Pampered Chef. Yes.
Wow. I was not on my way to remembering that. Oh my God.
Yeah. I think I still have some of this shit too. Anyways, I like took it when I moved out.
Because it was good shit, man.
Yeah. Like you go get a fucking steam bowl for your microwave for your veggies. Like only Pampered Chef made that shit.
Where am I going to find that?
Gosh.
Pampered Chef.
I wonder how many MLMs my mom actually like participated in. There was also like a jewelry, like my entire life was like fucking parties that my mom would throw.
Parties, yeah. People coming to your house and selling stuff. My mom used to sell Mary Kay, like when we were little, like when we were super little, living in Oahu when my dad was in the Gulf War. My mom was making extra money.
She wanted that pink car.
That's right. Oh my gosh. I just remember always having like their nail polishes. And I was able to like, she would do my nails like on the weekends and it was always like a pink nail polish. And it was always so like cute. Mary Kay stuff. She had it for ages.
Oh my God. The amount of Avon we had in our home was just.
Oh yeah. Avon was another one.
Yeah. God, guys.
The only party I'm going to is a sex toy party.
Yes. I support sex toy MLMs.
Get
all day.
On that level. Yeah.
Get on it. Yes. 100%. So yeah. Honestly, smart. Best Kevin's ever. We gotta find someone.
For real. I know someone.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. It's not me, but I do.
Okay. We'll get on in. We'll let you guys know the date and time. And you can zoom in.
Could you imagine having like a Zoom sex party and sex toy party?
MLM sex party, a sex toy Zoom.
You have to add toy. God.
The levels we would go. Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. That's our next idea. Yeah, our next thing. Don't steal our ideas.
Don't do it.
Okay. Anyway.
Okay. So this insurance place was a business and it was basically the MLM of Mormons because they needed to recruit people and be personable. And that's literally what Mormons were made for. And Travis was among the most successful. He ended up making a good core group of friends. So in 2004, he moves to Mesa, Arizona. And Mesa, Arizona has the largest Mormon church outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, which I did not know that.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that either. That's crazy.
It's so nuts. So Travis was very dedicated to his church, but like most Mormons, I knew they were very dedicated to the church and John Smith or God or whatever, but very sexual beings. Mm-hmm. So he broke the law of chastity quite frequently. So as they start to explore this aspect of Travis's life and the fact that he would break chastity, they didn't need to look very far because they had a call from someone who had dated Travis, and her name is Jodi Arias. She called Detective Flores to help with the investigation. He asks her what she knew, and she begins to cry and say that she heard there was a lot of blood. which is an odd thing to relay. Well, as they continue talking, she tells them that they had dated in 2007 for about 6 months. They had mutually broke it off and stayed friends. She said she lived in Mesa up until April of 2008 and then moved to Northern California. After the funeral, they begin to interview all of Travis's friends, asking if they knew anyone who would have done this. And every single friend said Jody Arias. Wow. They tell detectives that initially in their relationship, it looked like it could be the one, but their entire relationship was such a roller coaster. So they, of course, go back to the beginning of the relationship and find out what the truth of it all is. Because Jody is telling them that she broke it off now. Initially, it was mutual, and now she's like, no, I broke up with him. But friends were like, that's not at all how it went. She would never let Travis go that easily. So in 2006, Jody was living with her older boyfriend she had in Southern California. So this is how they met. Sorry, I didn't really explain that. We're now following Jody's story, and we're going back in time to how she met or came into the path of Travis. Mm-hmm. So it's 2006. Jody was living with her older boyfriend she had in Southern California. Jody was having financial issues and decided to go to the PPL convention, which is the insurance convention, the MLM that Travis was doing. So basically, they kind of recruited her, and they tell Travis, look, we recruited this really hot woman. Why don't you take her out and sell her on fully joining us? And also, if you guys hit it off, bonus. Well, they definitely hit it off. Immediately, Jody was your typical attractive woman in the early 2000s. She had bleach blonde hair, light eyes. She honestly was very good looking. Mm-hmm. And Jody seemed to have come from a pretty semi-normal background. She was sexy, but her weakness was that she found her self-worth in men. So she never went a day in her entire life without a boyfriend or being in control of relationships and her being the one to end things. So when she hits it off with Travis, she goes home and breaks up with her boyfriend. Oh. Yeah. Now for Travis, Jody had it all, but she wasn't Mormon. That was the holdup. So Jody never was a religious person, but Travis wasn't only involved in this MLM. He also sold her on Mormonism. So 2 months after meeting Travis, she is converting and Travis is her sponsor.
Wow.
By February of 2007, they had made things official, and they still lived in separate cities. So they would meet up and go on vacations together. Now, here is where things get messy. Up until this point and after, I have no empathy for Jody, but I do for a split moment see a little bit on her side. Only like the tiniest, it's like if you looked in the sky, that tiniest star, it's not quite, it's just a little baby fleck of salt. So while they're dating, remember I told you Travis was one to break the chastity rule? Well, mm-hmm. So was Jody. But what Jody didn't know was Travis was all about it. But in his eye, each time they had sex, her chances for marital material became slimmer and slimmer, which is some fucking disrespectful shit, in my opinion.
What the hell? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. So
he was like trying to devalue her at the same time that they were like sleeping together, as far
basically,
as
basically in his eyes, he's like, let's do this, but just so you know, like
I'll never marry you.
Exactly.
But without saying
any of that. Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
So I also have dealt with this type of situation, which is why women have that fucking 3-date rule. Like, it's as if like men are only, you're just a notch in their belt. You're just like all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like men are fucking trash, guys. But this shit, like she fucking changed religions. They were officially dating.
That's garbage. I mean,
Like I said, just a fleck of salt, because I've never killed anyone, but
no.
but that's some fucked up, disrespectful shit. Like, that's,
yeah,
men are trash, and that's all I have to say. So by June of 2007, the relationship had come to an end. So with things ending, Jody did what any reasonable person would do. She straight up moved to his town. They've been living in separate cities in separate states. But as soon as they broke up, she's like, I know where I need to be. Mesa, Arizona. So she sells it as she's trying to dive into religion. And that's the best church in Mesa. So she wants to be there. But Travis saw through her lie, like all of us do. And he tried to cut ties with her, but it was hard. She's in the same town as him now, hanging out with the same people he goes to church with, going to the same church he goes to. And Jody knew exactly how to lure him back in with that sweet, sweet V for vagina, if you don't know what V stands for.
Just in case you didn't
In case you didn't know, like an MLM, honey, that V, that boss babe vagina, she knew exactly how to get him right back. So she would call him up and be like, what are you doing? I want to come over. And he would be like, I don't want to. Okay. So basically she used sex to like manipulate his manly mind. And she lived in Arizona for about a year. So this was a relationship, just friends with benefits, for about a year. She ends up moving to Eureka. That's how I've always said it, but I heard it a different way. But I think it's Eureka.
Oh, Eureka, yeah.
Yeah, okay. She moved to Eureka, California in April of 2008 to live with her grandparents. This seemed like a good move for both of them to stop this horrible roller coaster. So, guys, like I said, I talked about Rachel Hollis for about 73 hours, and I just don't know that I want to make you guys sit here for another 37. So, I'm going to make this story a two-parter because we still have a bit more to go. Not too much, but enough that we can make, not ruin your entire week and make this the whole your whole week just listening to us talk about stuff. So we're really good at transitions, and
so good. Best.
So good. We're so good. So I'm gonna leave this here. Do not Google if any of the information you've already heard is something you haven't heard before. But yeah, we're gonna come back next week and complete the story. I hope you guys come back. Don't hate us.
Come back.
It's fun.
Please come back. You know you want to come back.
Please come back. Oh my God. I always come back. When it's a two-parter, I'm always back. I listen to other podcasts. They do it. But guess what? We're going to give you a recap on the next episode. They don't fucking do that on other podcasts. And I'm always like, what was the story? Oh, right. Like 30 minutes in. So I'm not going to do that to you. I'm like, was it her boyfriend that like killed her in the garage? No. That was a different podcast. What happened in the first part? Guys, I'm going to give you a recap. You don't need to memorize this episode so that next week you're on lot. What? Okay.
Words are hard, guys.
Words are fucking hard, guys. It's a school night. Okay. We'll see you guys next week for the end of this story. This horrible story. That's probably better. Have a good week. Goodbye.
Have a good week. Bye.